Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Guests on Sportsnet 650 call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. We'll go there in just a second. One other deal of note to pass along. Seattle Kraken have signed defenseman Ryan Lindgren to a four-year, $4.5 million AAV deal. We'll see if he can rebound a little bit
that's
from where his career has been. All right, now joining us from The Athletic, covering the NHL, our pal Sean Gentile. Sean, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
Yeah, fellas, how we doing? I'm fresh off writing the Tanner Janot trade grade.
So let's start there. I haven't had a chance to read it, but that was the sticker shock contract of the day for me so far, for sure. And I get the fascination with Janot. No, Janot is more for me. we see the Lindgren deal all the time for bottom pairing, big shot blocking defenseman. Anyways, the Tanner Janot one, that caught me by surprise. I get the fixation with him and what, you know, the idea of Tanner Janot, but man, 5 years for a player coming off his last couple of offensive seasons is still pretty wild to see.
It's like, of course this happened. We should have seen this coming. We should have realized that, like, whatever the July 1 contract version of the Tanner Janot trade that we saw when Tampa acquired him from Nashville originally, there's five draft picks coming back or whatever it was. Like, that's what this is. This is just like the first day of free agency version of that trade where Boston's like, oh yeah, this guy's good. He can be a long-term answer on our bottom six because he hits people or whatever. And you just don't account for the other parts of it, of the game. Like, he's got some defensive value. He's obviously a legit physical presence, but man, like, just a total offensive black hole over the last few years. I mean, he shot almost 20% his rookie year in Nashville, scored 24 goals, so credit to him, but that's a long time ago, and he hasn't even sniffed anything near that production since. So yeah, it's a wild one. I'm glad we got one of those, because God knows the high-end players, or air quotes high-end players, are a little bit less interesting.
Sean, the Canucks extend Garland, extend Demko at the first available opportunity, and bring back Brock Besser. 7 times 7.25. I think we all expected Besser to go for more if he changed teams today. What do you make of Vancouver sort of taking the entropy approach, as we're calling it, and doubling down on this core group?
I don't mind Besser. Like, I think, 'cause what are you going to do? Like, I know they obviously add Kane, but they still were going to need some kind of, you know, top nine winger, let's say top six winger. Like, mm-hmm. There was still going to be a hole there. So you might as well, you know, bring back the guy who's been pretty productive. We know that he's a good teammate. We know everyone loves him. And then you don't have to worry about that eighth year too, which I think is kind of beneficial for letting things go to July 1. Like, there's definitely I feel like that contract is probably right on the verge of being one where you start to get really nervous about it. But man, I don't know. At some point, if you're actually trying to win, you got to keep talented players in the fold. And I think, you know, 7 times 7.25 is good enough. I would say that's sort of where I'm at on it.
Yeah, the thing for me is just, I don't know where they were going to find a better bargain on the market today.
Yeah,
and exactly. We haven't seen we haven't seen Ehlers sign or anything like that, but it just, with the numbers we're kind of expecting to see and have seen already in some of the extensions, I don't know if you were getting a better deal than that.
Because, like, what's the alternative? You just punt and don't sign anybody, which is completely valid. I mean, obviously, we're sitting here talking about Tanner Janot making 3.5 over 5 years, so I mean, plenty of smart teams sit out July 1st. I don't think that's a completely impossible option. But, like, with where Vancouver is, what they're trying to do, clearly just, like, the overall organizational mindset, if you know that you need to add pieces, I'm not sure how they could have done better. Because there's no option close to Besser, really, on the open market at this point, you know, depending on how you feel about Ehlers. But it doesn't seem like he's any kind of option there, right? So what are you going to do? Sign a worse player for you know, for probably relatively close money? Or do you get into like the trade market where, you know, 3 days from now, you know, are they trying to whatever call Pittsburgh about Rickard Rakell? Like, I don't know if you want to do that necessarily either. So once you get yourself in that position where you know, you have holes in your lineup and a desire to actually compete, I think your options, you know, especially this year, man, they get pretty limited pretty quickly.
Whose work around the league have you most admired across sort of what we've seen to this point in the offseason? Incomplete offseason standouts for you, Gentile?
Oh, God, is there anybody, like, it's Florida in a runaway at the top of it, right?
You're
like, I think the better question is maybe who. The thing we need to start thinking about is, you know, who's even in second place. Like, you look at what Zito and that front office have done, even with, you know, the fact that they're, you know, they can sell winning and they can sell culture and they can sell the weather and the tax and what have you. But at the end of the day, man, getting Aaron Ekblad locked up for $6 million, given what he would have gotten on the open market, the Marchand deal, all that stuff. I love it. I love the numbers they got those guys signed to. And I love the idea, even you know, with Marchand, whatever, the dude's contract's going to last until he's 43 years old, but who cares? Like, they're in rarefied air now, man. They're chasing history. They have a very realistic shot at being the first team since the Islanders in the 80s to win more than two straight. Like, you make that stuff count. And if there's pain down the line for them, and there almost certainly will be in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, like, so what? Flags fly forever, and they're a team that's, you know, as long as they're putting that core out there for the next few years, man, they're gonna have a chance to win every single relevant game that they're in.
Sean, let me make a couple other suggestions, and we can talk them through. The Montreal Canadiens.
I love it. I like them adding Bolduc too. I think that's a solid move by them. They send out Logan Mailloux, who's, you know, on ice, he's a you know, right shot prospect defenseman who's got some warts, has some, you know, adds something to a lineup. I don't think he's not the kind of guy they need either. I think if you look at their roster, I think there is, you know, in what's coming up, I think there's some amount of duplication with Mailloux. And a guy like Bolduc, though, for a group that, you know, even with Demidov and whoever else, they could still use some goal scoring. He's a well-rounded player, ends up scoring almost 20 with the Blues last year. Really showed some substance too, I think, as a 5-on-5 player. I love them adding him to the mix for sure. And we haven't even talked about Dobson. My God, like, we haven't even talked about trading for Noah Dobson, right? So yeah, that there's plenty to like about Montreal for sure.
The Montreal Canadiens opened as plus 10,000 in the outrights market to win the Stanley Cup. They're now plus 5,500, which is tied. So they were tied with the Detroit Red Wings, and they're now tied with the Vancouver Canucks, moving up significantly. Vegas is the other mover from when the lines opened that I want to quickly get into. They opened at 12-1. They now sit at 9-1, having added Mitch Marner. Obviously, movement at the top end is harder than movement from where Montreal was to where Montreal is now. What do you think of the Marner fit for the Vegas Golden Knights?
I think it's solid. I think what we saw from them, like, and look, and any team's gonna get better when they add Mitch Marner. Like, we don't need to pretend otherwise. But also, what they've experienced in Vegas over the last few years, as they've added Tomas Hertl and, you know, to some extent Eichel, like, as they've strengthened down the middle, they've seen some brain drain on the wing, whether it's Marchessault or whoever else. Like, that's not, you know, a high-end contenders group of wingers. And I think Marner immediately vaults them up towards the top and puts them back in the conversation there. And they, you know, like, that's not to say they don't have pieces, obviously. Like, Mark Stone's still a really good player. Dorofeev gave them a lot last year in kind of an out of nowhere leap in productivity. So they have pieces. But if you wanted to continue looking at them as a prime contender in the Western Conference, I think they needed to make a move like that. So yeah, there is, there's a fit, it'd be tough to find, you know, Marner's going to fit in one way or another everywhere. But I think with Vegas, it makes even more sense.
So now with you know, a lot of the players we were eyeing, obviously Mitch Marner, Sam Bennett, John Tavares, even Brock Besser now off the market. Nick Ehlers really the premium free agent left available. You know, we're hearing some reports that decision unlikely today. I see Emily Kaplan has just tweeted out that the Hurricanes, Capitals, and Lightning are among the teams in on him. Which team do you think should be willing to really break the bank and outbid the others for Nikolaj Ehlers' services?
He makes so much sense with the Carolina Hurricanes that's almost a boring answer.
Yep.
Especially now that they've missed out on Marner, they missed out on Besser. You know, they need to add a piece to that top six. I love the idea of him landing in Washington though, because I think Washington, they got to figure out what they're doing at 3C. That's a problem for them. Lars Eller wasn't good enough last year. Hendrix Lapierre is, you know, a prospect who's lost some shine. They would love if he would have taken the job last year. Didn't do it. So there is a hole down the middle. I think there's a chance that Connor McMichael moves to 3C from the winger. He's one of the wingers for Pierre-Luc Dubois. So I think there's a chance they fill that internally. If they think that McMichael is a fit at 3C and they don't have to worry about that, the next, you know, the next kind of point of attention should be to try to add some other high end playmaking piece. And I think Ehlers certainly qualifies. Like, that's what's separating. And I know Washington was the number one seed in the Eastern Conference last year. So that's obviously a good team, but I think what would make them, maybe take them to that next tier of contender is a substantive, reliable playmaker like Ehlers on the top six. So yeah, I the idea of him landing there is really interesting to me.
Yeah, I think one of the other themes of this offseason, Sean, that we're already seeing kind of shape up, I mean, we've seen so many players just stay in place, right? And we didn't see any real trade market develop. You know, the Habs were able to get Noah Dobson. Beyond that, it was very, very quiet around the draft. Like, I think there's going to be just a ton of teams that are left disappointed with what they were able to accomplish. And, you know, just before we got you on, we were talking about Ryan Lindgren going to Seattle, 4 years, 4.5. And, Seattle's a team that you hear, hey, they're motivated to get better. And you look at what their offseason has really amounted to so far, and it's Mason Marchment in, Andre Burakovsky out, and Ryan Lindgren on the blue line. It's just like, that has to be disappointing. But I think there's going to be a lot of teams that end up in a similar boat to that. All right, I think we lost John here. So we will try. Well, I don't know. We'll see if we'll try to get John connected or not. It's a busy day for everyone covering the NHL. So thank you to Sean Gentile joining us, taking a few minutes out of his day to chat with us and give us his perspective on everything happening around the league today. And Drance, I was just making the point there at the end to Sean that I feel like one of the themes of this offseason from an NHL perspective is going to be, there's a lot of teams that are going to be left disappointed with what they were able to accomplish today. And we'll see. Look, we're only an hour and 45 minutes in. Nick Ehlers still has to decide to sign. But you think about how active the Canucks wanted to be, and instead it's bring everyone back. I was just making the Seattle example. It's, you know, hey, what's their offseason amount to so far? It's Mason Marchment in, Burakovsky out, and Ryan Lindgren on the blue line. I look at a team like L.A. even. We heard they were a potential landing spot for Marner. They were going to be in on Besser. Both those guys are off the market now. I'm curious to see how that... Anyway, Sean, I don't know how much you heard of my last question, but basically as we welcome Sean Gentile back into the conversation here from The Athletic, I don't know how much you heard of my last question there, but basically my point was, it feels like there's going to be a lot of disappointment around the NHL after today.
Oh, 100%. I kind of alluded to it when I brought up Rickard Rakell, right? Like, I look at... And of course, I'm based in Pittsburgh, so... You know, I unfortunately view a lot of stuff through that prism, but I look at a team like the Penguins where, you know, they have Brian Rust, they have Rickard Rakell. Those are legitimate, you know, middle six wingers. I know both on most teams. Now, granted, they played last season with Crosby, but I don't think on a true contender, they're going to be first line wingers. But if you're one of these teams, if you're, you know, one of the teams that. Yeah, maybe had designs on Marner or Besser or Ehlers and misses out. I think, you know, Pittsburgh's role in it and all this gets a lot more interesting too, because yeah, there's just such a shortage of talent at the top of this, and more teams have money to spend and a desire to spend it than we typically see. And yeah, it's an interesting economic puzzle that kind of comes into play.
What UFA that's still out there, Sean, are you most curious to see where they land? And you can't pick Ehlers.
Oh, man. Jack Roslovic.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like,
good pick.
It really is crazy. I'm just trying to, like, visualize Chris Johnson's big board here and see who's at the top. I am interested in seeing, outside of maybe Suter, I'm interested in seeing, like, where anybody who's capable of playing center for an NHL team goes. And I think Roslovic kind of falls into that category. It could turn into silly season, even more so real quick.
Sean, really appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this. I know what a busy day it is. So we'll let you get back to handing out more contract grades on free agency day.
Thanks, boys. Always good.
That is Sean Gentile from The Athletic joining us here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. And yeah, it is... I mean, it's Mikhail Granlund or Michael Granlund and Jack Roslovic at this point. Am I missing anyone? High-profile guys off the board. We're starting to see some more minor signings come in as well. Nick Bjugstad signing with St. Louis, was it? Signs the deal for Nick Bjugstad?
Yeah, 2 years with St. Louis.
David Rittich, the goalie, goes to the New York Islanders. So smaller deals.
Connor Garland, by the way, on Sportsnet right now with a Jaws DVD. Prominently featured in the Zoom call screen.
Well, it's Jaws. Very cool. It's Jaws season.
He looks extremely pleased, by the way, as he should. Every week is Shark Week for Connor Garland right now.
And he's got the salary to make it so.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know if he's like an annual July 4th rewatch Jaws guy or if he does it more frequently than that, but this is Jaws season. Like, this is when you're breaking the movie out, when you're breaking the DVD
out. Is it?
Out.
Okay.
Yeah, because it takes place on July 4th.
I'll watch it.
It's the quintessential 4th of July movie.
Yeah, and so coming back really quickly, I think the fact is that where the Canucks sit now, if we zoom out from the surprise, and I think reasonable fan elation that Brock Besser is remaining a Vancouver Canuck. This is a beloved Canucks player. This is a Canucks player who I think we expected to hit a bigger home run if he'd signed elsewhere today. So this is there's an element of selflessness in terms of Besser clearly wanting to remain in Vancouver, clearly picking this city, this market to you know, make it his home, right? Which you know, as he said before, it will be anyway. But to stay here and play his hockey here. It's pretty special, especially when you consider all that Besser has been through in the public eye, the relationship, and how deep that's been with fans. And so we zoom out. The Canucks still have a lot of time to change things up, but most of their cap space is accounted for. We've seen them. They took care of some of their work at the deadline in terms of like Drew O'Connor, Marcus Pedersen, Filip Hedl, Victor Mancini. They had a successful run in the American League playoffs too, which does, I think, create a little more local enthusiasm around the idea of promoting depth players internally, which is honestly the right course of action for the club anyway. And then they extend Demko, they extend Garland, they trade for Evander Kane, and they manage to keep Brock Besser right at the 11th hour. And so... when we zoom out and think about what that means, it's like this team's glaring need for a center remains unaddressed.
Yep.
The cap space is now dried up. It's going to have to be money out to bring money in at this point as the club seeks to upgrade in that area still. And, you know, looking at these outright odds, the day after the Florida Panthers won the Stanley Cup, the Canucks were plus 5,000 to win the Stanley Cup in the outright markets. They're now plus 5,500. So unchanged virtually, but the odds are getting longer, partly because Florida is now an uncontested favorite atop the heap, as they should be. So I think more than anything, what we should say is the Canucks have made one major addition in Evander Kane. They've limited their bleeding in terms of what they'd lose value-wise in unrestricted free agency. They've taken two sharp bets on this core with Demko and Garland being extended today. And they've yet to address their most pressing need up front. And as such, probably fair to conclude that while the vibe feels so much different because they were able to come to terms with Besser, it should the way that this market is quite reasonably feeling about the fact that they were able to do that deal shouldn't be misconstrued for a sense that the Canucks have made the sorts of moves that actually move the needle.
No,
in terms of upgrading their outlook.
They haven't upgraded because there's no new players in.
Evander Kane.
Yeah, Evander Kane and Pugh Suter out.
Yeah. Yeah. Which,
right?
Which makes them a little bit faster, a little bit bigger.
A lot bigger,
a lot faster.
Yeah.
Presumably tougher to play against.
Less defensively reliable.
And less versatile.
Weaker on the PK.
Well, and less versatile.
And fewer options down the middle.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, you want to call it a wash, whatever. I'd probably prefer Suter, but that's fine. So it is, like, it's very much just, it is the same team coming back. And that's the far and away the point of contention we're getting in most frequently, which I completely understand, in the Dunbar Lumber text line. I think it's going to be fascinating how they attempt to address those needs from this point on. I don't think Jim Rutherford or Patrick Alvin is going to shy away from acknowledging that it's still a massive need, given how they've spoken about it in the past. So the question now is, okay, you made what I think is a very understandable decision to go with this Brock Besser deal, right? To hold your 15th overall pick, to hold your top prospects. All of those make sense. Every single one of those decisions, I would say, in fact, makes a lot of sense in a vacuum.
Yeah.
A ton of sense. It's just that it still leaves you asking this big question down the middle, and the traditional means of, like, hey, we've got a big need on our roster. How are we going to address it? You trade futures or you sign a UFA. You know, those are the two most common ways of doing it, of getting a win now player on your roster. Those opportunities have largely passed at this point.
Small bit of Canucks adjacent news. Sammy Blais signs with the Montreal Canadiens.
All right.
Team just announced.
Shout out to Sammy Blais for getting an NHL deal after coming to Vancouver on a PTO, playing an AHL deal this year. And by the way, Darren Dreger says things are percolating around Sabres defenseman Bowen Byram. Trade conversations are happening with Calgary, Vegas, LA, St. Louis among those interested. Also hearing an offer sheet on Byram is being contemplated. So will we get an offer sheet at some point, either today or in the coming days? Dreger suggesting that at least one team contemplating that with Buffalo Sabres defenseman Bowen Byram. Interesting to hear the Canucks not on that list. And of course, with the salary cap space taken up now with Brock Besser, that makes a lot of sense. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll take a break here in the next segment. Dimitri's going to join us. Is Dimitri going to join us right at 11 here? I believe, yeah. Okay, so we'll have Dmitry Filipovich on. We'll get his take on what's happened, what hasn't happened so far around the league, who improved, maybe dive into the pecking order and the hierarchy in the Western Conference a little bit with Dim. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit Homes by DavidLYoung.com. We got one more hour to go here. Randeep Janda and Bik Nizar are waiting on standby to take over with the People's Show from noon till 3. And then Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah will have you covered on Canucks Central after that. We'll see if we hear from Patrick Alvin at some point today. We'll also see if the Canucks make an external UFA signing, which they have yet to do. Brock Besser did make it to UFA status, but obviously he remains a Vancouver Canuck. All right, now joining us to chat a little Canucks and just around the league stuff as well, our pal, host of the Hockey PDO cast on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He is Dmitry Filipovich. Dim, what's going on, man?
Fellas, busy day.
So what is your favorite contract sign so far, and why is it the Tanner Jeannot deal in Boston?
Amazing. Shades of Matt Bolesky from years ago, if we're going to remember some guys. Yeah, that was absolutely crazy, especially when you think about it. Now, listen, like, Brad Marchand at his age and where the Bruins are at,
sure,
from a talent perspective, I don't think it would have made a difference. But before they traded him at the deadline, he was pretty vocal about wanting to end his career in Boston.
Yep.
And they didn't want to pay him, I assume, in the seven-ish million dollar range. And then they went out and just committed that to Tanner Jeannot and acquiring Victor Arvidsson today. And so it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough. I was wondering whether they would be joining the Penguins as one of the few teams in the league
to sell,
that are like openly tanking and trying to be bad this year. I'm skeptical they'll be that bad, assuming full health, because McAvoy and Lindholm are coming back and you have Pastrnak and Swayman at key positions. But man, the way they've handled this and the way their Puckpedia page looks right now is very bleak. And I imagine all the Canucks fans listening to this are very excited.
There you go. You can take some joy in that.
That's right.
Anyways, we can get back into maybe some of the stinkers at some point here so far. Is there a deal that stands out that you do really genuinely like for the signing team so far?
I mean, it's July 1st, so you know,
so
that generally it's going to all going to be kind of framed through that lens. I actually, you know, I don't love it necessarily because it is a big commitment considering the age, but I was pretty surprised that Vlad Gavrikov's contract was as reasonable as it was, especially after you saw what Provorov went for yesterday.
Yep.
Generally, the market for defensemen this offseason, inferior players making comparable dollar amounts, and for that to be a 7x7 when I thought it realistically could have gotten into the 8 and potentially pushing 9 range, considering how thin the market was at that position and how good of a player he was, I actually thought that one was reasonable, and that kind of sticks out to me as a very rare exception on a day like today.
Three movers in the outrights market that I want to ask you about really quickly.
Well, the Kings Cup odds moved purely because of the Corey Perry.
Did they
signing
down?
No, they moved up because it becomes increasingly likely they're going to at least make it to the Stanley Cup final, and then obviously they're losing
their Western
fashion.
Conference champion odds really spiked specifically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did they actually?
No,
yeah.
No, but they actually did move up a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, no, sorry, I believed it. So there's four big movers that I think are worth talking about when you compare the opening lines to the current one. Number one, the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. They opened behind the Carolina Hurricanes. They are now alone as the shortest odds.
As they should be.
They kind of lapped everybody in terms of having a great offseason, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's so rare for a team that won a Stanley Cup to just bring back the entirety of their roster, essentially, right? And I get it. There's a lot of years in the back end there once you get into 2030s. Which almost seems like unbelievable to even frame this stuff, thinking about the year 2032 or whatever.
Right.
That's going to happen to any contender, but they have a chance to be an all-time team if they're not already, with another run or two here. And so you take on that risk anytime. And for them to bring all three of those guys back, and they're certainly going to have to move an Evan Rodriguez, for example, but they're as well-positioned as any reigning champion I can remember to repeat and do it again for a third straight year.
The Vegas Golden Knights opened at 12-1. They're now 9.5-1. That's just the Mitch Marner effect, but mitigated somewhat by the Alex Pietrangelo news. Do they have more work to do on the back end?
Yeah, it seems like they're pretty hot on the Rasmus Anderson market. I don't, beyond Trevor Connolly, who they took in the first round 2 years ago, and a 2027 first or whatever, they don't have necessarily anything left from a roster perspective that's that appealing. To Calgary, I really would have thought Nick Waugh and Nick Haig, two guys they've moved in the meantime, would have been centerpieces of a package in a Rasmus Anderson trade, but it's Vegas, so we need to throw logic out the window in terms of how they're going to make it happen, because we know based on their history, they're going to find a way, and they're going to add Rasmus Anderson, I'm sure, at some point here and extend him. And so I think that's a good bet to make, just from a perspective of it'll move up even further, I think, once
right.
that news comes out.
So capture the value before they do Vegas stuff. Montreal Canadiens went from 10,000 plus 10,000 to plus 7,000 as a result of Dobson and Bolduc. What the Bolduc deal for me is one of the best trades we've seen this offseason.
Yeah, I think you and I are on the forefront of the Zach Bolduc bandwagon. We were talking about it a lot during St. Louis's push post Four Nations to make it into the playoffs. I mean, he's such a pure scorer, right? Like, he went off. I think he was top 15 in the league post Four Nations in goals scored.
I think it was fourth.
And when you think about the logic of they so desperately needed to add a player of that specific skill set to play with Demidov next season to give him a chance to succeed, because obviously we saw a little cameo with Alex Newhook down the stretch, and I just don't think he has the speed or skill to keep up with him necessarily. And so that combination makes a lot of sense. The Dobson addition obviously changes things quite a bit, and they're having an awesome offseason. They're going to have to figure out some stuff in the next year or two in terms of salaries, potentially moving out some of these veterans that are making a lot just to create more wiggle room for themselves. But they've added so much talent without subtracting it, and so I think that makes a lot of sense.
Moving on, are there centermen? Well,
what was the fourth team?
Oh, the fourth team that moved is, so I did Florida, I did Vegas
and Montreal, yeah.
Montreal, and then there's a fourth team.
Well, Utah probably, right?
They've only moved up a little bit. Okay. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I might have just gotten my numbers wrong.
I did want to ask on St. Louis, though, okay, specifically, because, you know, from a Canucks perspective, right, they're hoping to make the playoffs, and you're looking first and foremost at the wildcard teams. If you're looking for teams to fall out, and that's Minnesota and St. Louis, I was really impressed, and obviously it was easy to be impressed with the number of games they won down the stretch there, but specifically with that, like, the tier of guys after the Kyrou, Thomas, Buchnevich age, right, with that next wave of Neighbors and Holloway, and Bolduc was part of that. Then you got even Snuggerud and Dvorsky coming.
Yep.
And they make a trade from that position of strength and bring in Logan Mailloux on the back end. How do you look at St. Louis and kind of their positioning and their chances of repeating as a playoff team going into next year?
I feel pretty good about it, just because obviously that winning streak they went on is something you wouldn't expect a team to repeat. But
yes,
you looked under the hood, and we talked about this at the time at length. They were a very good 5-on-5 team. A lot of it was very legit. Pretty much the change in their trajectory dates back even to the coaching change and bringing in Jim Montgomery, and then the Cam Fowler trade, giving him a defenseman who can move the puck and skate and help them out there. And so you kind of scale that out to next season. I would expect that to continue. They have a lot of depth. They have two above average goalies that are just going to give them 82 really good games. And so they have a really high baseline, in my opinion. And I think they're pretty well positioned in a central that's going to be very competitive, with Utah obviously taking a big step up. I like them in the mix there. I would still probably point to them as the most, aside from Minnesota, we'll see. They haven't really obviously used this newfound cap space they finally have this offseason. We'll see what happens with Rossi and whether they bring him back or turn him into another roster player who can help. So that maybe that's a bit of a TBD, but it would be probably either them, the Wild, or the Blues as the teams that are going to fall out if Utah, as we expect, is going to take one of those playoff spots. But I'd lean towards the Wild being that team at this point, because I think St. Louis just has a higher floor.
The Central does look like it's going to be pretty, pretty tough next year with the improvements from Utah and St. Louis, as you said, having that floor. And even Minnesota, a vulnerable team, still having like Kaprizov and Boldy and Faber as a foundation to build on, right?
Well, And a full year of Rantanen on Dallas, and then obviously Colorado, we know how much turnover they went through from a roster perspective last year, and they're presumably going to be at full health with all those guys in place, and Landeskog back this season as well. So yeah, the Central is going to be a gauntlet.
And I am curious, not that I'm like calling a Winnipeg collapse or anything here, but from the Jets perspective, it looks like they're going to lose Ehlers. You know, we heard Besser as a potential target for them. Obviously that doesn't materialize. There's no other really high profile scoring winger out there on the market now. They signed Jonathan Toews, that apparently they thought was going to convince Ehlers to stay, which was kind of a weird one. But again, I think the baseline of talent there is so high, and with Hellebuck and Net, they'll be fine. But does it seriously impact, or should it seriously impact how we view them, not just as a solid playoff team, but as a potential Stanley Cup contender?
Possibly. To the baseline point, like when you have Connor Hellebuck in place, and he's going to play, and as we know, probably he shouldn't, but he
will
play 60 to 65 games. You're going to win 50 of those probably. So I wouldn't necessarily pencil them in as a repeat President's Trophy winner, but I think they're pretty comfortable in that Central Division, and we'll still see what they do, right? Beyond Ehlers looking like he's going to leave, they obviously have to figure out contract extensions for both Dylan Sandberg, who was immensely valuable to them last year, and Gabe Vilardi as well. They still have a ton of talent there, and they're going to have a bunch of cap space. They're probably not going to use it on the free agent market because that's the way they've operated, but there's going to be some trade opportunities certainly for them, and so I imagine they're going to try to replace those Ehlers minutes with a lesser winger, but certainly one who's still going to help at least somewhat. So,
do you see any centermen still available for a local team that might have a need?
Hypothetically.
Seems like the Canucks were in on Christian Dvorak, who goes to Philadelphia. Jack Roslovic still hasn't signed. He's more center capable than a full-time centerman, but nonetheless, any names that catch your eye, whether it's trade targets or players unsigned still in unrestricted free agency?
I mean, it's going to be tough to do with, after the commitments you made, particularly to Brock Besser, kicking in this year. But I think Marco Rossi is certainly going to just keep being a topic of discussion until we get some sort of a resolution there, because it certainly seems like Minnesota just does not want to pay him, and we're waiting for one of these offer sheets to hit. There's a lot of noise about Byram potentially being one. Cooley is still out there. Will Cooley is certainly. But yeah, I'd say Rossi would be the most obvious one. Beyond that, it's an incredibly thin market. It already was, and we've seen it be depleted by some of these guys, like the veterans in Nelson and Duchesne and
Tavares, Bennett.
And, yeah, all of them just going off the board before we even opened July 1st free agency. So, yeah, it's a difficult market right now to be trying to improve a position of need. I can't stop thinking about how this Nick Waugh situation unfolded with Vegas, because obviously they wound up using him to get the eighth year on Marner and get that extension done before anyone else had access to him. But it seems like he would have been available for these past 2 weeks or so since the playoffs ended. And at $3 million, he would have been such an immense target for anyone, especially Vancouver, with what they need. So that was a missed opportunity. But yeah, you look at the market right now, and beyond getting creative with some sort of a trade or an offer sheet, the UFA pool itself, you're probably not going to get access to it there.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because on the one hand, we've been talking so much about, okay, the cap is spiking up and we're going to see all these crazy UFA deals. That dynamic, and look, there's been some surprising numbers handed out, but that dynamic has kind of been countered by so many guys just choosing to re-up with their own team. And I'm curious, like, if that's going to be not just a one-off pattern here going into this year, but if we should expect, just as we go forward, teams are going to have so much cap space and be so scared of wading into the UFA pool to try to get deals done that I almost think we should just kind of expect, like, yeah, all the best players, guess what? They're going to sign. They're going to sign with their own team, and except in rare circumstances, they're probably not going to make it to unrestricted free agency, because the value of those to those teams of getting the certainty is just so high at this point.
Yeah, trades are going to become more important than ever. I know Tom's been hitting this for a couple weeks now, but the opportunity cost of not going long-term with your RFAs is increasing as well. And so pretty much any guy in that 23 to 26-year-old age range that has team control, we're going to dislike every single bridge deal, essentially, because you're missing out on so much opportunity there to take a shot on them, have them on your books, and then have them as an asset. How many veterans so far this offseason have we seen moved for actual picks going back, as opposed to when they used to previously be these sort of anchors that you had to either attach picks or prospects to get rid of them? Now that all those guys have value in the trade market.
Yeah, and that's the sort of the logic, I think, where Connor Garland, 6x6, it's like every team should be doing that deal with that type of player today. I think that shows foresight on the part of Canucks management. I feel a little bit different about the Thatcher Demko deal, just given that, you know, that's a top five active goalie cap hit, and the other guys are, you know, demonstrably like workhorse goaltenders in a way that I don't even think you want Thatcher Demko to be in a ceiling case, given the Lankinen deal and sort of given the track record there. And so I wonder, like, regardless of how well he performs, if he's a 45 game a year player, is that worth a top five cap hit for a goaltender?
It's not. I will say, though, the context of keeping it at 3 years, especially given that injury risk, probably mitigates a lot of that, right? Because we saw a totally different conversation, but what did Jake Allen sign for as top guy in the UFA market, right? To keep his AAV below two, and that's the logic there from a New Jersey perspective. So I'm fine with that, because as we're seeing, and Jamie, you brought this up, like with the cap going up, all of our expectations for what these contracts look like have to shift, right? And so now I find the term for older players is much more of an issue, I find, than the cap, the AAV figure itself. And so I think that's what the Canucks were thinking. And so I get that line of thinking.
It also does feel like, and we were throwing around the NFL comps with Canberra before the show, right? And he made the comparison of like the Falcons signing Kirk Cousins and then drafting Penix. And it's like, and that's like, you signed Lankinen, but then you signed Demko as well. But with the number specifically, it also kind of feels like a quarterback signing before the next quarterback resets the market. Like, some goalie is going to reset the market above the 8.5 range. We haven't seen it yet, but with the cap going up, eventually that's going to happen. And if it had been a longer term deal at 8.5, it's like, well, what are you getting from this, from the Canucks perspective on Thatcher Demko? But the term, at least you buy yourself the flexibility there. And then you would expect at some point, again, as I said, the market for goalies to get reset.
Well, and over the past calendar year, I'd say the way teams are viewing the goalie position has changed quite a bit as well, right? That's how we got to this point where you looked at this year's UFA class for goalies, and it was as thin as it's ever been because no one became available. Pretty much every team just kept their guy and extended them while they still could to avoid that situation. And so I don't think this is a one-off necessarily. Like, I think previously we used to view the volatility and variance of the position as a reason to not invest in them, and I still think that's probably the case. At the same time, teams are just not willing to take on that risk, and so now they're just keeping their guys. And I think next summer is probably going to be a similar situation where there's going to be no goalies available, and so having them at least gives you a trade chip, not to mention obviously the idea that you're not wasting any valuable points throughout the season when you have to use your backup.
Yeah, it seems like that's the plan, right? Hey, we've brought in the very high paid backup to try to give us that floor, and we can keep him fresh for a playoff push.
I will say one thing that I've been talking about this on my show, and I think is a really interesting thing to think about, is in the NBA, for example, some of these higher salary players, once they become expiring deals in the last year of their deal, they're actually viewed as like such legitimate assets for teams acquiring them, because that entire salary comes off the books and opens up this big chunk of real estate for you to add in the offseason, right? And we haven't seen that really take place in hockey in the past, but I think with the cap going up, that's going to be the case, right? Because each year the cap's going to go up between 7 and 8 million essentially. And so Demko is 8.5. That's all of a sudden, once that comes off the books 4 years from now, that's going to be $16 million in real estate with the cap going up and that contract coming off the books. That gives you wiggle room to pivot as an organization.
The point about the trade chip as well, and I think especially with Demko, like that's one of the reasons I thought he would have been a really interesting trade chip this year, is almost, we'll see where his health goes from here, but like the team, if you're a team trading for Thatcher Demko, you almost want him on an expiring deal or a 1 year deal. You know what I mean? Where it's like, hey, let's see if he gets hot for us, and then there's no commitment long term, and you're going to get to that, back to that situation, or close to that situation sooner rather than later as a result of the short term deal. Okay, we talked about the Florida Panthers having just a fantastic start to their offseason. Let's look at the other Stanley Cup finalists, the Edmonton Oilers. Connor Brown signs with New Jersey. Corey Perry, who of course scored a bunch of goals for them in the playoffs, is going to L.A. They traded Victor Arvidsson. So they've been a lot of moving parts farther down the roster. They get the Evan Bouchard deal done. They've still got the massive question in goal. They don't have a ton of cap space to work with. What do you see? Like, what should the priority be here? What should the strategy be for the Oilers going into next season?
Yeah, it's clearly a departure from the mistakes they made last offseason when they sort of doubled down on a lot of the veterans that helped them during the previous run to the Stanley Cup final, and then wound up jettisoning the younger, faster guys in the process. And we've seen them sort of pivot now and go the opposite direction. You obviously didn't include Evander Kane there as well in the salary dump going to Vancouver. So they still don't have necessarily a ton of cap space to deal with and to add, and that's going to be very important for them. I thought, you know, in the Bouchard one, I get it from the perspective of you're trying to fill out this roster and maximize your chances of getting back to the Stanley Cup final this season, so you can't really take on that added salary. But 4 years from now, you wonder what that next contract is going to look like for him and how many millions of extra dollars that's going to cost them as opposed to signing it right now. So that's one of those opportunity cost situations. It's tough. They're going to need to be creative. They're going to need to target players that they obviously haven't shown an ability to in the past, just to get faster and more skilled and give Draisaitl and McDavid better winger options to play with. I'm very curious to see what they do because they haven't really added anyone yet.
Just thinking through the Canucks thing one last time. Every year I feel like I'm thinking about the Canucks and what they've done, and I'm thinking to myself, man, they really loaded up on the wings. Last year they lose Elias Lindholm, but they, you know,
DeBrusk,
Heinen, yep. DeBrusk, Sprong. The year prior, right, it was like Mikheyev, Lazar, he's a center. Is he? Why does this always happen to Dmitry?
I think it's just the nature of the fact that those guys are available in more abundance and there's just fewer center options available. So I get it, but I'm with you. You didn't add Kiefer Sherwood there, who was obviously one of the hits.
It was sick.
Amongst that class. But yeah, I think it's just the reality of the market and who's available and them just trying to grab whoever they can because there's just not really centers available.
We somehow didn't mention Utah, Brandon Tanev, 3 years. What do you think? You're a Utah mammoth.
I like it. I mean, the AAV is low. It's in the twos.
2.5, I think. Yeah.
he's going to play a bottom six role for them, probably start out on the third line with our guy Jack McBain, assuming they get an RFA deal done with him. And considering the personnel group they have, especially in the top six, with how much speed and skill is there, that's the player type that I think makes a lot of sense as a compliment. So I like it. I certainly would have liked to see them, given the cap space they had, especially after trading Matias Maccelli to Toronto. Mm-hmm. They were kind of around that $20 million range. I assume if Brad Marchand hadn't extended, they would have given him a crazy offer in terms of how many yep. dollars on a shorter term.
Nate Schmidt, available. Yes, to the Utah Mammoth.
3-year deal, $3.5 million AAV for Nate Schmidt to Utah.
I mean, that's less than the 4x4 that I thought he'd get after the Stanley Cup Finals. So, I mean, with the guys they have in place, I think they're pretty well positioned to use him similar to how Florida got the most out of him,
yep.
which is not relying on him
to move the
in
puck.
A top four matchup role and just giving yep. him third pair minutes, essentially.
And also have really fast forwards coming back to him so that he's not tasked
on an island, yeah.
Yeah, he's not on an island tasked with like beating a forecheck through the neutral zone himself, right? Which is where Nate Schmidt can get into trouble. Florida, I thought, kept him making area game passes and using his mobility to set up forwards as puck carriers through the neutral zone. I think Utah can do the same. I also do like that he can play both sides, given the sort of younger composition of some of the guys that they'll be trying to blood over the course of the next couple of years.
Well, and I mean, he was moving like his decision making in that Stanley Cup final was so world class, and his ability to get the puck to the forwards on PP2 as well. And so I like how that's going to fit on Utah.
Set play shifts where yes. they're chasing the lead with Durzi and Nate Schmidt on the ice at the same time is also going to be fun.
Dim, what can we expect to see in free agency coverage from the PDO cast coming up?
We're going to do a 2-hour show later on today, kind of recapping everything that went down on day one, and then Tom is going to be on the show tomorrow, kind of circling back and doing a sweep of what goes on in the meantime. So, yeah, a lot of coverage moving forward, breaking down everything that's already happened and looking forward to the stuff that will.
I look forward to it. And, Dim, hey, man, this is your last hit with us for the season. It's always a blast, dude. We really appreciate the time. Thank you for doing this, man, and have a fantastic summer.
You guys as well.
All right, that is Dmitry Filipovich. He's the host of the Hockey PDO cast, and always a pleasure to have him join us in studio here, this time weighing in on free agency. We'll take a break. One final segment of Canucks Talk left. The Canucks, by the way, have not signed an external UFA. We are still waiting on a new acquisition or addition to the team, but they did do a lot of business today nonetheless. So we can take a big picture view, look around the league, wrap up with our thoughts on what's happened here today. Next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Think that you're wild. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintex studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere, visit HomesByDavidLYoung.com. Just to give you a sense of what to expect for the rest of the day here, this is our last segment. Randeep and Bick on The People Show are coming up next for 3 hours. Typically, they try to open the phone board, so you'll have your chance to react to everything that's happened with the Vancouver Canucks today. Dan and Sat on Canucks Central is coming up at 3 o'clock. We're still waiting to hear when Patrick Alvin will address the media and potentially appear with Dan and Sat on Central. Also waiting to hear from Thatcher Demko and Brock Besser as well.
Sounds like at least one of them will be tomorrow.
Okay.
Might be both of them. And sounds like Patrick Alvin will be speaking like within the hour.
Okay, so yeah. Stay tuned on The People Show in all likelihood to hear from Canucks general manager Patrick Alvin. Now, should we interpret that as a signal that, not that they're done today, but that like they're going to go today without an external UFA signing if Patrick Alvin's getting set to speak here potentially within the hour?
I would assume so. Look, there's still some things that I think would be worth considering kicking the tires on. In the free agent market, did we get the Justin Danforth signing yet?
I don't know that we did.
Justin Danforth would be the sort of player. Pew Suter still hasn't signed.
Yeah, that's, I was going to bring that up. That's still, I mean, is he the highest profile guy left? Him and Granlund.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ehlers, of course. Sorry, Ehlers, then in the next year, it's Suter and Granlund.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of big names that are still on the board. You know, could the Canucks, like, really bring the band back together if they can move out some money?
And get Suter in?
You know, I wonder about that, certainly, given the fact that I know Suter's among the sort of names that does like living here, like, yep, wanted to stay if at all possible, but couldn't really miss a pretty unique market opportunity for himself. So, you know, we'll sort of see and track that one. There's still, you know, like a guy like Phil Tomasino, who wasn't qualified by the Pittsburgh Penguins, 23-year-old right-handed centerman, super skilled, uneven motor, but there's something there. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a lot of talent there. I was very confident that he was going to be a thing. He hasn't panned out yet, but that would be like a low-cost flyer that I think would make a ton of sense for a team with center needs. Just give yourself another out.
Yep.
Pontus Holmberg was a guy who was not tendered a qualifying offer by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Pretty sharp defensive center overall. Not, you know, I don't know that you want him playing in your top nine necessarily, but again, just depth, another option to sort of have. You certainly very capable of being an everyday fourth liner for any NHL team, but maybe some upside beyond that. He's still in his mid-20s. So he'd be another name that would be of interest to me as sort of like a worthwhile pivot. We haven't seen Jack Roslovic sign.
Radek Faksa still out there.
So there's some centermen still sort of working through exactly what this looks like. Wouldn't be a bad call for the Canucks to go get one of them. Whether it's a young flyer or a more established depth player like Radek Faksa. But I would think that the Canucks are probably largely done taking big cuts.
Unless they
can free up money first.
And unless it's probably the kind of thing where unless a really spectacular opportunity comes their way in the trade market or something kind of unexpectedly, then you might see some machinations. But for right now, it feels like the big deals are probably done. Now, before we get back into kind of the big picture wrap up on the Canucks, in a rarity here on Free Agency Day, we've got a peek into the future. We've got a deal announced that also tells us about a deal the player is going to get next year on this day in 2026. And we mentioned Nate Schmidt going to the Utah Mammoth, 3-year, $3.5 million deal. Of course, after signing the 1-year value rebuilding deal with the Florida Panthers, we saw OEL do something very similar last year and then cashing in with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And this year, it's going to be Jeff Petrie, the veteran defenseman, puck-moving defenseman, who signs a 1-year league minimum deal with the Florida Panthers. They do it again. They bring in the veteran, and you can pretty much lock in the, what, 3-year, 3.5 or whatever deal for Jeff Petrie. Yeah, he's a little bit older, so he probably won't get that. But maybe one more payday for Jeff Petrie after he plays the year with the Florida Panthers.
Yeah. I mean, a nice ad for them. Looks like Nick Perbix is going to Nashville. So we're still seeing a steady stream of deals trickle in here. You know, looking through the West generally, Vegas, I mean, adding a true elite talent, mm-hmm, like Marner, even losing Alex Pietrangelo, turning left-handed defender Nick Hague into another like physical left-handed defender to replace him in Jeremy Lauzon plus Colton Sissons, who then replaces Waugh, who helps them duck a tampering charge and landing Mitch Marner. That's nice work, right? I still think they have needs on the back end, but reporting indicates that Rasmus Anderson is of interest to them and maybe is helping drive himself to the Sonoran Desert here. And then you've got, you know, some reporting too from Darren Dreger about them maybe being among the teams interested in Bowen Byram. So clearly there's another shoe to drop for Vegas, but that's looking like a very imposing team in the Pacific. Calgary hasn't done much.
Oh. Well, let's get an update on a Pacific team here, which is Chris Johnston reporting that Cody Ceci has signed a 4-year deal with the LA Kings, carrying a $4.5 million AAV. Ken Holland simply cannot quit Cody Ceci. Acquired him in Edmonton, and yep, now one of his first moves as in charge in LA is acquiring the defenseman.
He's fine. He's a bit limited, but he's fine. You know, like, he's perfectly fine as like a 4-5 defenseman on a good team.
Yeah, and then it comes to the playoffs and he's driving the team nuts, right? He's driving the fans nuts.
Well, but he's also been tasked with, I mean, sure, in Edmonton, he was regularly being paired with Nurse, right? Which didn't help things. They had like negative mm-hmm. chemistry, mm-hmm. and you know that was a true top four pair for the Edmonton Oilers until Broberg emerged, you know, in the conference final for them. Last year in Dallas, he was their number one right-handed defenseman. Like, that's too much. But you know, on a team that already has Doughty, you know, and on and on, a relatively deep defense corps, even without Gavrikov remaining. You know, it's like Doughty and Mikey Anderson are going to be doing the heavy lifting yeah. there. You have a better opportunity to insulate him, and you have a really good defensive environment with a pretty bought-in forward group. So, you know, LA, I would say LA has not hit a home run or anything.
No, and LA, especially because I speak about like teams left frustrated. They had a ton of cap space.
Yeah.
A ton of cap space coming in today. And I had them as a Mitch Marner dark horse contender for sure. Instead, he goes to a division rival.
Yep.
I think they probably viewed Brock Besser as a plan B.
They also signed Brian Dumoulin.
All right.
Yikes.
I'm not sure about that one.
He played really well. He played really well for New Jersey after they acquired him, but. Yeah, I mean,
3 years times $4 million for Dumoulin. So you locked yourself into 8.5 on CeCe and Dumoulin.
I think they're gonna regret replacing Rob Blake.
That's an interesting one.
So the LA Kings now spinning their wheels. The LA yeah. Kings entered the day +300 to win the Pacific Division. The Canucks were like +800. I wonder if that gap has a chance to close. I think if you're looking at now. Like, who can the Canucks knock out of the playoff picture? I think LA's
in the conversation.
Become at least interesting. I mean, they're still a really good defensive outfit. And we've seen guys like Kempe take a real step. Byfield took a real step in the second half of the season last year. They've still got outs like Brant Clark, guys that can still hit a different level and be higher end contributors than they have been to this point.
There is with LA always also the age downside question, right? Like, not that I'm betting on it happening with either Kopitar or Doughty, but you do always have to be mindful. Totally. You know, you talk about the outs, the potential outs on the upside case with like Brant Clark yes. and stuff. There's the potential, whatever the opposite of an out is, on the age case with Doughty and Kopitar. If you see a really steep drop off.
Although Doughty like barely played the first half of last season.
True.
So and they were I mean, the truth is that the way that team defends, they're in a lot of games. And it's mostly down to their center depth and forward like skill and speed, right?
So but yeah, the transaction list for LA so far, it's retaining Kuzmenko, Armia in, Perry in, CeCe in, Dumoulin in. Like, that's a lot of filler.
Yeah,
I think it's fair to say useful players, don't get me wrong, but when we're talking about them as a team to really go out and make a splash,
sure.
They've obviously failed to do that.
Well, they must think they're fast enough, but they're not doubling down on speed. Like, you compare their additions to Utah, for example, mm-hmm. where you bring in Paterka and Tanev and Nate Schmidt, right? And it's like when Nate Schmidt is the slowest skater that you have just acquired, right? I mean, that's a team that's preparing to play at warp speed. And that I find far more frightening, you know, from a Canucks perspective and like the state of the Western race perspective than you know, what we're seeing out of LA. Minnesota hasn't been heard from?
Nope. Well, Tarasenko trade acquisition.
Sure.
That's
but,
it.
I mean, that's, you know.
I agree.
Third liner.
Yep.
So Minnesota hasn't been heard from. LA hasn't. LA has spun their wheels. Edmonton's still clearing mm-hmm. the decks for whatever comes next. We'll see, right? Because, you know, Edmonton lands Granlund. We're talking very differently about what they've done.
Yep.
But, you know, that's they haven't exactly upgraded. The Winnipeg Jets feel likely to lose Nick Ehlers and haven't. It's not like they've landed a replacement
nope.
yet. So that
they miss out on a potential Besser acquisition as well.
Colorado cleared cap space, but we haven't seen the other shoe drop there yet. So they're very much an open question. So I would say like one positive for the Canucks is that some of the team, Anaheim has reams of cap space and we haven't seen them.
Haven't been able to use it.
They haven't been able to use it. So, you know, at one sort of positive here is it's not as if there's a bunch of teams like outside of Utah and Vegas. Like Vegas really stabilizing their position and Utah really like adding Paterka and leaning into what they do well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's teams out west where you'd say they have like clearly solidified or improved or passed Vancouver for some of those teams. Even St. Louis, like I didn't like that trade for them acquiring Logan Mailloux. Logan Mailloux is a good prospect despite the you know, obvious controversy that surrounded him, but Zachary Bolduc is absolutely sick.
Yeah. Like, and I, as I was saying to Dim, like, I loved their group of young forwards. Yeah, me awesome. Too.
Yeah.
And look, it's still good. It's still, like, yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it was contingent on Zach Bolduc, but it's tough to go away from that when I felt like it was a real identity of their team. It's like, agreed. We come at you with waves with all of these really talented guys.
And all of these talented guys who have some, like, competitive dog in them, yeah. too, right? Which Bolduc was, you know, not the face of, but a very, very important part of. I guess they'll look at it as we traded, at the end of the day, we traded a winger for a younger right-handed defenseman. Mm-hmm. We need to take swings and on premium spots in the lineup. But yeah, I mean,
it doesn't, you don't look at it and say they got better for this year.
I'll say this though. I like it a lot better if they're the Pew Suter team.
Sure.
Right. Like if it's like, okay, well, we're replacing Zach Bolduc with a guy like a Pew Suter, and now we have more sort of positional flexibility and more defensive bona fides, then I'm more interested. But until we see that move to replace a forward, yep. in their top nine, I think the jury's very much out on them.
I do think, as we talk about kind of big picture league-wide themes, and we're looking at the rest of the West and the Pacific Division, a lot of teams haven't been able to necessarily accomplish what they'd like to do so far. And you made the point about the Ducks. They just have so much salary cap space. And obviously, there's a desire to get better. And I think one of the things we're seeing is if you're a bad team.
Radek Faxa back to Texas.
All right.
3 years times $2 million. Also, Jonathan Drouin, two-year deal with the New York Islanders. So the center options are really drying up.
So Jonathan Drouin leaves Colorado to go to Long Island. That's interesting. And just to wrap up the point I was making, the teams that are not competitive and have all of this cap space, it's hard to use it. It's legitimately hard to use it. Like San Jose has miles to go to even get to the salary cap floor. And I was wondering if they were going to do like a truly outrageous offer to Brock Besser or something like that. But what we're seeing is, for as much as we might like to spitball about like, hey, will San Jose offer Marner like a 2-year max level deal or something like that? Those opportunities just aren't materializing for players. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing teams reluctant to go the tear down, more traditional rebuild seller route, is that it feels like it's getting even harder now to dig out of that hole because it's getting harder and harder to convince good players to take your money once it gets to this time of the calendar.
For sure.
Like, we haven't seen any of those teams where you look at it like, oh my gosh, they have so much cap space. None of them have done anything.
No.
None of them have done anything with it. It's getting harder and harder to find good, smart ways to use it. Like, Chicago traded for Sam Lafferty today.
Sam Bennett stayed.
Yep.
Aaron Ekblad stayed. Brad Marchand stayed. Brock Besser went to the wire and then stayed.
Mm-hmm. John Tavares stayed. Brock Nelson stayed. Matt Duchene stayed.
Yep.
There was nowhere to spend it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, there was nowhere to spend it.
And I think the way to view it is that we live in a talent crunch now. We live in a world where there are not enough good players for teams to warrant spending their cap space on, especially given that the top players that teams would break the bank for don't want to move.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, across the board, that shaped this marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
No one actually wanted to change teams. No one actually wanted to take the highest bidder's money. Right, which is, you know, something that's effectively like restrained to some extent the potential inflationary impact of this cap growth era on player salaries. The NHLPA might want to like have some seminars and sort of get some work done to try and you know, like educate or make players more comfortable with making the transition, because you had a lot of potential for guys like Bennett. Honestly, maybe even Brock. Brock probably wasn't going to reset the market.
No, but like if
he goes out there and signs an 8.5 times 6 or 8.5 times 8 with San Jose or whatever.
Oh, I think he could have gotten 9 on a short. Honestly, like San Jose needs to spend their money.
Yeah.
They need to do something with their money. And right. A good player comes and wants to sign with them, they probably would have given it to him.
I mean, that gets some juicy comps sort of in the mix. So, you know, I think more than anything, like players wanting to stay with their current teams, players opting for happiness and comfort, which like all, you know, no shots fired on this, right? Non-derogatory. I do think the players have actually themselves shaped a free agent frenzy that's ended up being sort of like less eye-popping from a sticker shock perspective than it had the potential to be.
Yeah, it absolutely has, because so many of them. And again, I think you're also seeing teams, as much as we talk about the traditional priorities of players, right, which is no state tax and warm weather and all of that, competitive environments. I think if you are not, if you don't have a competitive reality on the horizon for you, it's going to be really, really hard to attract legitimate players.
One of our listeners texts in the LA Kings defensive depth chart. Anderson Doughty, nice. Dumoulin Cece, Edmondson Clark, oof. Yeah, I'm going to call LA fragile in their perch.
Yeah,
I've had a lot of LA stock over the years. I'm not out or anything because they still have some pretty sick forward talent and a ton of speed in terms of that forward talent. Like, there's a world where they just play Kempe with Byfield and Fiala mm-hmm. all year, and it's like all of those guys go absolutely nuke and mm-hmm. they're 108 point team. Like, I absolutely think that's in their range of outcomes, but I don't love that they've lost this much collective speed, because I thought that had become a real core bit of their identity and a really effective part of what made them such a monster and such a consistent playoff team, albeit a consistent also ran in the first round against the Edmonton Oilers over the past 5 years.
All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As a reminder, the People Show with Bick Nizar and Randeep Jand is coming up in 10 minutes. They're going to have Kevin Woodley on Demko's extension. Yannick Hansen is going to join the show and weigh in with his thoughts as well. So make sure you tune in for that. We'll see if we hear from Patrick Alvin at some point in the next hour or so as well. But to wrap up here from our perspective, really the story, Alvin's coming on literally, should I throw to it right now? All right, we're going to hear from Patrick Alvin momentarily. Before I throw to Patrick Alvin at Rogers Arena, I want to thank Boston Pizza for dropping off some lunchtime fuel for us here on a busy day at the station. I'm very, very excited to throw to Patrick Alvin and go enjoy some Boston Pizza. So shout out to Boston Pizza for hooking us up on free agency day. Again, as we wait to hear from Patrick Alvin, the Canucks sign Brock Besser, last minute, 7-year, $7.25 million extension. Connor Garland, or I shouldn't say an extension, actually, because his last contract expired, but a deal for Brock Besser. Connor Garland signs an extension, 6x6, and Thatcher Demko, 3-year extension with an $8.5 million AAV. Here is Patrick Alvin.
Outside perspective, obviously, a lot of things went wrong. I think when you talk to the players for different circumstances and reasons with injuries and all that, and they looking back, and there were pockets when we were healthy and we played really good hockey, ended up with 90 points, and I think they understand that this is something we continue to work on. I do believe that they see the process of the younger players in Abbotsford, what's coming in the pipeline, and I mean, Vancouver is a fantastic market to play in, and I think Adam and the new coaching staff here have done a really good job interacting with the players here at, up to this point. So the belief is there, and I'm excited.
Did this turn out to be a better day than maybe what you thought it was going to be a couple of days ago? Or
you never know. You never know. I mean, free agency, I mean, there's not a whole lot of players available. Commitment to term and dollar is always the fine balance, and you're going to be also careful, listen to your staff, what you have in-house here. I do believe that a lot of players winning the championship in Abbotsford deserves an opportunity here too. So those were the discussions leading up to today.
With the acquisition of Evander and Brock and Connor back in the fold, Patrick, how much do you think you can improve on scoring? You guys were 23rd in the league this past year. You think there's more from within and the addition of Vander that you guys could be?
I do. What we have gone through here, meeting with the coaches, we do believe there is ways for us to play better. Part of it is I don't think we had our decor intact starting last year. And I think with the addition of Marcus Patterson here and some of the younger players, I believe we are able to probably move the puck a little bit quicker and spend less time in our own end. And I know the coaching staff are working on, you know, different ways and definitely adding Evander to the mix here gives us hopefully more options and become a better team and being better in the power play as well.
Why was it important to get a deal done with Thatcher now as opposed to seeing how his summer went into the season to prove that he was fully healthy?
Well, I think, to be all honest, I think this is something that I met with Thatcher's agent, I believe, when we were in New York there in March, start talking about the future, and he was, I mean, Thatcher expressed how much it meant for him to be Vancouver Canuck, and for us it was obviously more about finding the right path to get a deal done, and this one really made sense for both of us.
At this stage of his career, and knowing that you've got Kevin as well, how mindful does the organization have to be about a workload and overworking Thatcher?
Well, with the schedule coming out here, you guys will see with the Olympics and how tight it is. I mean, it's going to be definitely be a challenge moving forward, 84 games. I think we have, in my opinion, the best goalie tandem in the league here. So I think this is definitely a strength of our team.
You might have the best goaltending trio if you include Arthur. So how do you see that playing out? Because you would need waivers next year to go down, and I certainly think he, you know, sounds like he thinks he's ready to move up from the AHL level. How do you manage three?
Yeah, no, I think that's something we're going to obviously go through here and be ready for training camp. That being said, I mean, we have a young goalie in Ty Young that played extremely well down there as well. So we have good depth in goalie in net here, and with the addition of Medvedev here in the draft too, we're really position us strong in net and position us strong defensively as well with the younger players coming.
Will you need to move one of the goalies potentially?
Well, we'll see here. You know, again, always looking for ways to improve our team, and if it makes sense and something comes available, then definitely we'll look into it.
There were reports during the season that you had offered Besser a 5-year deal. Now he comes in at 7 years. What changed in there? Was there a bit of a compromise in bringing the cap hit down to add more term?
Yeah, I think obviously a commitment like this, and from our end too, a little bit unknown in the season where a cap projection is going to be. We talked about several different options for Brock. And again, Brock expressed his interest of staying in Vancouver long term, which was very important for him. And then you're going to, you know, figure out what makes sense for our team to be competitive moving forward as well.
What about Brock? What about the center position? I mean, Brock and Petey haven't necessarily had a lot of 5-on-5 chemistry the last couple of years. You and Jim have made it clear since the end of the season you need to add another center. You're up against the cap now. Is adding a center still a possibility or priority, and how do you do that?
Yeah, and part of the decisions here are communicating with Adam, and Adam felt, you know, very confident starting the season with Petey and Sheil as the number one and two. You know, we have a couple of younger centers, Radis, Hassan, I forgot his name here, Mueller, that are playing really well in Abbotsford and deserves a chance too. But absolutely, this is something we will continue to look at and see what's available. Obviously, there wasn't, I don't know if it was it one center available at the free agent market there today and no trades. So obviously teams are holding on to centers. So we'll see where it goes. But, you know, again, Adam felt really confident in Petey and Cheadle being the number one and two here.
It looks like the door then is closed on Pia Suter. I mean, you never say never, right?
Yeah.
But how far down the road did you get with him?
You know what? Again, I mean, Pius had a great season. And again, I respect all players that have earned their way into free agency. And if they want to take a look what's out there and see if they're getting more money and a fit somewhere else, good for them. Pius knows what we think about him and how he would fit in here, and we'll see here. I exchanged a conversation with his agent. I don't know where it stands as of now, but we'll see.
Okay.
Patrick, you're heading into the season with about $5 million in dead cap with the buyout. How did that impact this this free agency, and how will it impact the season of what you're able to do?
Well, that's something we were aware of when we do our projections, and when that happened, that's something you start planning on, and what you have to spend, and how you build your roster, and also in the projections, looking at the younger players where they are, and you know how you can set them up to succeed if they need times in Abbotsford or not. But I don't know if it impacted more than obviously being a cap hit here. It was still wasn't that a lot of players available in the end of the day, and some of the players that we talked to expressed their interest of playing in the States and not in Canada too.
When you bring back three key guys in Besser, Demko, and Garland, how much of the discussion is it's time for this group who has been together, grown together, but really hasn't done a lot of winning together? Like, do you get a sense that, I don't know if frustration is the right word, but a commitment for this group to move it to the next level?
Well, I think they realize that. They are excited. I think my job is to surround them with players that together will grow as a team. And when you have players like that, Demko, Quinn Hughes, Petey, Besser, I mean, those are top players in the league. It's our job to make sure we have the right surroundings here. And I do believe that we added that some pieces, and we still have some work to do. But I'm very proud of what our scouting staff have built up in terms of the pipeline, that there is younger players coming here. If they will be ready or not, I think that's training camp will dictate that.
When we look at the Demko contract, he now has one of the highest cap hits among goaltenders in the NHL, same as Connor Hellebuck, who's a three-time Vezina winner. Given his injury history, how much of a concern is that, him staying healthy over the course of that contract, given the money that you're committing to him?
Yeah, I think that was part of where we were settling on the three-year deal, and I think that was part of for Thatcher as well. In the end of it, Thatcher's going to be 33 years old, and if you see it, the combined of what Lankinen and Thatcher are making, I think a lot of teams are up towards that same amount, and again, having those two quality goalies locked in here definitely makes our team competitive here.
You talked about standards and raising them in terms of the group. It took a step under Rick. I don't know if it was a step back last year overall. Like, what about bringing back the same group makes you confident that they're going to commit to what it takes at the next level? And is there another step in your mind that needs to happen?
I think that's where we felt that it was enough tweaks here with the group, not having a healthy Thatcher to start last year, not having Marcus Patterson in here, O'Connor, with the addition of Evander Kane. I think the guys or the players were excited, and they saw the, you know, they were able to see some of the younger players in Abbotsford coming up here. I think we all of us, including myself, can grow and get better. And I think that's something that, you know, the coaches here now are trying to find ways in areas of our games to grow and get better. And I think the players were excited. As I said, I Adam and the coaching staff have done a really good job here interacting with the players in the summer and, you know, bringing the leadership group together, meeting, raising their standard, their awareness that the player, it's going to be the players that's going to drive it. It's not just going to be Adam and the coaches. They're there to support them, but internally, I think that's how you build a stronger foundation, and when it comes to push within the group, that's where you're becoming a better team.
Whether it's PD, Thatcher, Edel, like if the training camp started today, are they all ready to go?
Everybody was healthy leaving here. They were medically cleared, and yes, everybody is healthy as far as I know.
So this first day of free agency, leaving it with just re-signing players. As you go into the summer, will you be looking for maybe those bargain bin contracts, trying to fill out some holes around the edge? I'm thinking as well, you're letting Cole McWard go, so maybe there's a need for more defense in Abbotsford.
What is the approach in the coming months?
Yeah, I think we as I said, I always looking with my group to find ways to improve our team if it makes sense. One area that we felt strongly in Abbotsford was having Willander and Minio coming in our depth too. And some of those guys, I mean, we like Cole, he's been a good hero, but we felt where we had players slotted in the organization, it would probably be tough for him to move up. And, you know, areas that we still have a couple of depth guys to sign on two-way deals that we believe that will spark Abbotsford, and we're going to be young down in Abbotsford again, so we need a little bit more of the leadership down there.
Our first chance to talk to you. What's the story on Safonov?
It was definitely a guy that we looked at, and I think that the initial conversation was that he was gonna become free from the reserve list, and when Chicago wasn't able to release him, then we had invited him to training camp here. Rookie camp, take a look at him. Still a young player that played in KHL for a couple of years and got the experience, and it was worth for us looking at it. Or guys felt that maybe there's something more there.
You got 1 year left, though.
Correct. And we're seeing if it would materialize or not to any kind of contract this year, or otherwise we just continue to follow him there.
So it'd be a situation where you'd potentially be asking him to get out of his contract in the KHL if he wanted to break.
Yeah, I think that's something more in discussions with his agent and himself, and see where he is, and also where we would, what kind of opportunity we would have here.
Yeah. Thanks, Patrick.
Okay, thanks.
Good day. That is Canucks general manager Patrick Alvin with his thoughts on what the club has done so far today on July 1st. That's it for Canucks Talk. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for making us a part of your Canada Day. Bick Nizar and Randy Janda up next with the People Show here on Sportsnet 650.